The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. On a day where we could see decisions made by a rogue city council that could have generational negative impact on our city, on our families, on our region. Let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top story.
And joining us live here on the Dory Monson Show is your Seattle Police Chief, Carmen Best. Chief Best, I appreciate you coming on with me on what's going to be a very important day for the history of this city.
Good afternoon, Dory, and thank you for having me.
You know, you're a child of Tacoma. I think you told me you went to Lincoln High School, right? Weren't you a proud Abe?
That's correct.
Yeah,
I was.
I'm a proud Ballard Beaver. I think you and I were at the University of Washington about the same time. So you and I both grew up with this region. How did we get to where we are today, Chief? How in the world has this happened? Because I just find all of this so tragic. And just how do you think we've arrived at this sorry destination?
Yeah, well, Dory, I think it's a very storied and complex set of circumstances that bring us where we are here today at this very moment. While it is rather tragic in many ways, we have to believe that at some point we're going to turn this around and have a better outcome. You know, the city council vote today, I think it would be premature for me to comment too much on it until it's completed. And I'm holding out hope that it won't be as bad as I think it might be. But they're going to have the deliberations and they're going to make their vote. And then we're going to have to react and respond to whatever that is.
Well, let's talk. Well, you don't want to speculate on how the vote turns out. It's reasonable, because hopefully they're still listening to inputs. It's reasonable to talk about the consequences of this vote. And what just blows my mind, Chief, is at a time when we all know how the city has been struggling with the heroin addiction problem, the homelessness camps, the crime that is attendant with it, it is so counterintuitive to, I think, most people that this would be a time we would cut police budgets. And that's where I think we're headed down a very tragic path.
Yeah, well, I would agree with you. I think that some of the issues that have been brought up with this whole defund movement have been, you know, valid concerns about how we can respond to some of these things better. And believe it or not, I am not opposed, and I don't think any of our officers are opposed at looking at potential ways that we can have a more effective and efficient response. But just cutting off, you know, 100 or more officers without any game plan, without any training, is not the way to do it. And I keep hearing there's a plan, but I haven't seen the plan. So at 3 o'clock in the morning, when somebody is out in the middle of your street, you know, in mental crisis, who's coming? You know, who have they hired? Who has been trained? Who is going to be the effective response to that situation? And I have not heard that answer yet. And that is why I have a deep level of concern. If we want to do something different, we need to have the discussion and the dialogue that takes us there. And one more quick thing is that I would say any empirical research that you have a control group and then you have your test group. And so you can pilot something out on the test group and see what might work and where there might be better responses. But to go out there without any sort of valid data is completely reckless and is inherently dangerous to everybody who lives in this city.
Well, and not only that, Chief, but here we are in Seattle. We are about the same size as Boston. Boston has about 50%, 50% more cops than Seattle does. And it's interesting that as we've heard about this violence that's been rocking America the last few months, Chicago, Portland, Seattle, New York City, Baltimore, Boston hasn't been talked about because Boston is adequately policed. And so if we're looking at empirical data that would support that maybe having more cops will lead to a more tranquil city, I think we have that out there already, don't we?
I would agree with you. We do have that information out there that shows that Seattle is, you know, per capita, very understaffed compared to other cities comparable. It's interesting that we had agreement on that not even a year ago from our city council, and now here we are with wanting to cut the department by 50%. And while that may or may not happen today, I think that it's been pretty clear that they are still on that trajectory for the future.
Well, what you're referencing, our friend Brandy Cruz had this audio. Let me just play this for you. This was in October when Lisa Herbold, Andrew Lewis, Stan Strauss were all running for the city council. And here's what they were saying just a few months ago.
We need to fulfill our commitment to the public to grow the size of our police department.
We've got some of the best trained police officers in our state.
We need to hire more police officers in the city.
So all of these council aspirants, as they were running for election or re-election, they said Seattle Police is the best in the country. They said that we need to hire more cops. And now all of them are on board with the massive defunding of the police. That would suggest to me that there is a lack of both moral and intellectual character in people who say one thing so they can get elected to office and then just join the mob and the knee-jerk hatred of cops once they're in office. And to me, that illustrates the absolute failure of who's in office right now, Chief.
You know, Dory, I will say this. I agree that we have one of the best police agencies in the country. We really do. Any place that I've gone, you know, I have gone all over and talked to other chiefs in high positions. They absolutely praise the men and women of our department. So we do have a great organization. I will also say that the colossal flip-flop of the city council is somewhat stunning. But, you know, I'm not a politician and I'm not the person who voted them in. But I think those are questions that are better posed to the council members themselves.
Well, they won't address that. They simply won't. They've put themselves in such a cloistered environment, and they pack the city council meetings with the mob that will just read their 45-second statements. And so, yeah, I will continue to try to get answers from them. One of the other things, besides cutting the department budget, is cutting your salary by more than $100,000. I know that late last week I heard legal counsel for you say that that sounds entirely retaliatory, that you spoke out about these budget cuts, about the council, and now to punish you for your insolence to dare speak out, they're going to just slash more than $100,000 from your salary. What's your reaction when they first floated that idea?
Well, obviously, no one wants their salary cut, and so it was disappointing to hear. And it does feel somewhat retaliatory and punitive because of the timing and the way that it came about. And that amount of money is not going to make a huge dent in their efforts to balance the budget. And so if they were going to do that and do it to every single department head, I mean, there might be an argument, but this is, you know, absolutely directed just to me, just at Carmen Best, because Carmen Best has said that, you know, what they're doing is reckless and it's not well thought out. And I have a responsibility. I'm an honest broker, if nothing else, to talk about actually, you know, what the truth of the matter is. And we'll let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah, and I know that you don't play the race card, but I don't know how when racial equity has supposedly been at the heart of all the stuff we're dealing with right now, how in the world would they be able to get away with paying a black woman more than $100,000 less than her white predecessor? I mean, just the optics of that would be, in any other time, it'd be impossible, but we're in some bizarro world right now.
Well, I think it's fair. One has to ask, I mean, simply by the fact, you know, of race and gender, if they play a role in any of these decisions. But, you know, I that's not really the principal point here. It's just like it doesn't make sense to do. And I think that is more of the question is the why.
Yeah. Okay. Agreed. Just a couple other things for you, Chief. A couple of weeks ago, we covered extensively. I had a couple of your neighbors on my show, and they the mob went to your home, which has become an increasingly prevalent tactic. And that's why I don't consider these protesters. I consider them domestic terrorists because they are going to the homes of council members who are not radical enough. They're going to your house to do what? I don't know, because you don't vote on budgets and policies and all of that. But families are being terrorized. I talked to a man on Queen Anne who was beaten into a concussion outside of his home as the mob went by late last week. This tactic of going to homes, to me, elevates this more to domestic terror than peaceful protest. What's your view on all of that?
You know, Joy, I know that's been a tactic used previously to go to the homes of folks. And what I can say is that I don't think it's the right thing to do. As I said earlier, you know, I don't vote on these issues. There's nothing that they're going to sway me to do in regards to the outcome that they're looking for by showing up at the house. And what I'm concerned with is that it's the harassing nature of people when they show up. And people want to, in many cases, sort of overlook that. But there has been, you know, property that's been damaged, you know, property that's been spray painted on, you know, issues of, you know, staying all night and intentionally and disrupting the neighborhood. So for those reasons, I don't think it's just a First Amendment free speech issue. It delves over into the harassing of individuals, and it's just simply not right.
Yeah. No, it isn't. It isn't. Especially when your family and your neighbors have nothing to do with this dispute. And that's what I find so troubling. Just a couple other things, Chief, real quick. It was clear. I had such respect for you in the early days of CHOP because it was clear that you were so opposed to giving up the precinct, to giving up a chunk of our city. And there were obviously some pretty deep rifts between you and the mayor as far as how that all that played out. How's your relationship now with the mayor? How are things going?
You know, the relationship is good, Dory. I know there's been a lot of speculation. I'm not sure where it's coming from. But the mayor has supported, overall, the police department and moving forward. She has not been one who's advocated for defunding. And when it comes to issues of the CHOP, I will say that, you know, from the beginning, I did see this as more of a problem than maybe others did. I certainly did not view it as a block party or one where we should be encouraging people to come into that neighborhood in the manner that they did. That said, eventually, when the crime issues became so prevalent that we needed to address it, people did finally get on board, and we were able to move the Capitol Hill protest area out of the area.
Yeah. Okay. And finally, I started by asking, how did we get here? And so I want to end with this. I know that, you know, you haven't liked some of my criticism over the years. As I said, I've just grown to have such great respect for how you have dealt with this whole situation. But the last time I talked to you at a police event, we talked about our kids, about our daughters. We talked as parents. I used to coach against your daughters. I'm so worried, Carmen, about our families, about our kids. I'm worried about this region. I'm praying every day for leadership. I asked, how did we get here? Where are we going? I mean, are we at a true crossroads in your view that if we take the wrong path today, we are just going to be this dystopian nightmare of a city? And if they aren't as radical as we fear, then maybe we have a chance to have a city that our kids can be safe in. Where are we going from here?
Yeah, it's hard to say, Dory. I keep pushing for people to re-envision, to come to the table, to have conversations, to be rational and thoughtful about how we move forward. I absolutely do not give up hope that that's going to happen, but we have to acknowledge we're in an unprecedented time between, you know, the COVID, the economic constraints that we're under, as well as some of the really pervasive issues that we have to acknowledge about race and racism, whether it's in criminal justice or healthcare or education. So I think it's a time, you know, we can come to this reckoning, we can have these conversations and move the needle in the right direction. I absolutely believe that. But yes, this has been quite the challenge.
Yeah, to say that might be the understatement of the year right there. This has been quite the challenge. I can't even imagine what it's been like. Well, look, Chief, I appreciate all of your time today. So what do you think's going to happen? I know you said you don't want to speculate. Give me a little speculation. What do you think's going to happen at 2 o'clock?
Yeah, well, you know, I imagine there will be some cuts, and I think that, and I don't know how deep or how much. And I think that I'm going to, consult with my command team about what that looks like and how we might move forward. You know, those will be the cards that were dealt. We have to be able to manage the city. And first and foremost, it's managing, of course, the public safety aspects. So we're going to revisit, based on what we get, about how we might need to redeploy or make some changes so that we can maintain the highest level of public safety with the resources that we have.
Okay, well, I'll be watching with interest. I really mean this, Chief. I've had a lot of dismay at our lack of leadership around here the last few months. I've been very impressed with how you've handled things, not just with an ugly social climate on the streets, but defending your officers, handling just an adversarial political class around here. I think that Seattle's very fortunate to have you.
Thank you, Dory. You know, honestly, I just try to do what's right and be an honest broker.
It's all we can ask of our people in charge. All right, Chief, let's talk again soon, okay?
Okay, sounds good. You have a great day.
All right. You do the same. Seattle Police Chief Carmen Best joining us live here on the Dory Monson Show. Just, where are we, about an hour and 38 minutes away from that council meeting where they could become the most radical city council in the United States when it comes to policing. And the fear is, again, we got radical, you know, legalization of drugs. We have public defenders that want to legalize drugs even for drug dealers in the letter that we told you about last week. We have Dow Constantine, who wants to let criminals out of jail, as Jay Inslee has already done, at an unbelievable pace. We're just seeing criminals filling the streets, and we're going to see no cops to police them. And it's going to get really ugly unless the city comes to its senses. And as I said, this is a regional problem. You know, they're investigating a stabbing in Everett this morning. There were three arsons in Olympia last night. A church was burned. I told you they were going to be going after the churches. Arsons in Olympia. You know, cops had to shoot a guy who had shot at them first down in Pierce County last night. This is a regional issue. All right, thanks, Chief Carmen Best, coming on with us. That is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Meanwhile, we still got a lot of economic and health issues. The governor targeting businesses. We told you about how he's shutting down bowling alleys, water slide parks. Now they're going after the flowers? Tell you about that coming up right after we check the news here on the Dory Monson Show. Well, I've mentioned before, my family and I, we have a nice little tradition. Usually the day before Mother's Day, we make the trek to a place called Flower World because it's beautiful, great selection. And we like just on Mother's Day, we do our deck planters, our front porch planters. Our girls help us. It's just become a really nice little tradition. However, I find out that the good people at Flower World are, things are not blooming with the state of Washington right now. They're fining Flower World. The owner there is defiant about it. John Postma is the owner, and he joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. John, good to talk to you this afternoon.
Yes, thank you, Dory.
Okay, so let's go through this. So you guys, did you stay open throughout the whole coronavirus thing?
Yes, we were declared an essential operation, and so we dealt with it from the very beginning. And there is some confusing that, like with the water park in the Chelan, they closed and they wanted to open up and they got in trouble. That's not the case here. We did everything we could to prevent the spread of COVID-19. We feel very comfortable with that. That's a part of the 99-page appeal. And until June 3rd, I think, we allowed people to use face masks. And the rules in the workplace are very strict when people are using face masks. There's about 40 statutes that cover that aspect under the WSHA. And so we train the people to safely use masks, and it just doesn't work. They were contaminating. They were taking it off and on, and you know, theoretically, after you touch the front of your mask, you have to wash your hands again, and otherwise you could contaminate other things. So if we finally said, okay, no more, you can't use those, and that kind of.
Okay, so let me make sure I understand this, John. So after doing all of your research, you determined that it was more unhealthy to wear the face mask for the reasons you just stated. So did you? The state claims you ordered your employees to not wear face masks. Is that true?
Right, and that's because under the law, there are different statutes that says very clearly that we are entitled to do that if we find out that the benefit of using masks is worse than wearing them, where they contaminate a lot of other things that they normally would do. And
sure.
you see what happens in all over. People touch their mask, and if they have the problem, they would spread it around. And so we said we use social distancing, we use disinfection, we have everything done correctly, we space our people's lunches, et cetera, et cetera. So we did a lot of things. We did acrylic shields where people could check out procedures, got changed, Everything else.
Okay, I got you. So let me make sure I understand. So did a customer turn you in to this snitch line that Jay Inslee has created?
Well, we don't know. I mean, we're not privy to who complains, but it could be one of the. There was one person on our staff that said, "Well, I she didn't like that she couldn't do it anymore." So that, you know, who knows?
So if your staffer, if she had wanted to wear a mask, you still would not have allowed that?
She could if she would, every time she touches her mask, if she would then wash her hands, we would have to have a medical examination if she is able to do that. There is many, many steps that have to be done before you can allow it. So we said basically, no, we can't do that.
So do you think other businesses are because I see waiters who are, you know, adjusting their mask. I see people at the grocery store adjusting their face mask. So you're telling me that it's your belief that every time somebody touches their face mask, if they don't wash their hands, that they are a greater health risk than no mask at all?
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, there was a big article in the Seattle Times about, you know, with the good parts and the bad parts of masks, but they did not emphasize the fact it goes right along with very stringent regulation. And if you are aware if you have a problem with COVID and you don't realize it, or even if you do, you touch your mask, you contaminate the workplace. And the rules in the workplace are different than what you personally want to do. Think about it. For 8 hours, the people now have to wear a mask. For 8 hours, they can potentially contaminate the workplace. If you go to the grocery store, if you're going to go to the grocery store, you put your mask on, and out you go, and you disinfect your hands. You should be, anyway.
Okay, so the state of Washington has hit you with a $4,200 fine. First of all, how'd they come up with that amount? And secondly, are you going to pay it?
Well, that is $4,200. No, we're not going to pay it. We're going to appeal it, and we're going to appeal it to the state Supreme Court if necessary. I'm not sure if they want to go that far, because what happened, the whole reason that they can do this, and we had a session with the LNI here, we said, well, how can you do this? He says, well, it's the governor who makes us do it. And so that was the answer. What they actually did, they passed an emergency, the LNI passed an emergency regulation, what basically says you have to comply with everything what the governor says. The building industry, by the way, has a lawsuit going, I believe, and to challenge that, because the governor does not have that authority.
It's been so capricious. I talked to a bowling alley owner last week, 63-year family business. They are going to shut down for good up in Everett. I talked to the owner of the water slide park that you mentioned earlier over in Chelan. They're shut down now. They don't know if they're going to survive. They're just going around and almost randomly, without any data to back it up, just killing businesses and industries. But then the question comes, you gave a 99-page rebuttal to the state of Washington. That had to, if you had any lawyers involved, your rebuttal's costing you more than that $4,200 fine. So why aren't you taking the path of least resistance, John?
Well, in the first place, I'm doing a lot of my homework on these items, and then when it gets to the courts, then we'll have to get more attorneys involved. But, you know, you can't let this happen as bad as I understand. I know a lot of people, it's complicated. They're afraid. They're fearing all kinds of things. But that's not, this is so important that we cannot have the executive powers making laws. I mean, that's what's really happening. And so if our, unfortunately, both the Republicans and Democrats, if they had any guts, they would get together and say, hey, we need a special session, you know. And somehow that is not possible for one reason or the other, or they don't do it. And so it's really bad, Dory. I mean, you know, this is such an representation without any input from the people.
Yeah, no, I got you. All right. Well, keep me posted on how it goes. Like I said, John, my family and I love coming out to your place. You have a beautiful business going there, and I hope we can all weather the storm.
Okay, Dory, we'll keep you up to date.
Okay, thank you, sir. That's John Postma. He's the owner of Flower World, which is hit with a $4,200 fine because he says it's more dangerous for his employees to wear masks than to not wear them. All right, love to hear your thoughts. You can text me at 98973. That's 98973. Lots more still to come here on the Dory Monson Show. Thank you for all the feedback on the Carmen Best interview and the interview we just had with the Flower World guy. I want to focus on the Carmen Best one for just a moment because here's what is so distressing. We have people who are incompetent running the city of Seattle right now on the Seattle City Council. And I'm going to go back. I want to play for you once again the soundbite I played for Carmen Best, and I didn't want to take my interview time. So let me give you a little more context. This was, Brandy Cruz had this on Q13 this weekend. In October, three council aspirants, Lisa Herbold was running for re-election, Andrew Lewis and Dan Strauss, they wanted to be first-time Seattle City Council members. And in October, all three of them talked about how we need to spend more money on cops. We need to add more cops on the streets. Listen to this, and then let's talk about the character of these three individuals.
I believe really strongly that we need to fulfill our commitment to the public to grow the size of our police department.
We are going to also need to make sure that we staff our police force correctly, and that means retaining more police officers. We've got some of the best trained police officers in our state?
We need to hire more police officers in the city. I see on a daily basis that there's parts of our city where we don't have the staffing numbers to have effective community policing strategies and deter the kinds of crimes of opportunity that are prolific.
We need to...
Okay, so that's Lisa Herbold, Andrew Lewis, and Dan Strauss. That's 10 months ago when they were all running for city council. And they said, we need more cops. We need to spend more money on police. Seattle police are a model for the rest of the nation. And now they are all part of this. Let's cut the police budget in half. Let's slash Carmen Best's salary. By the way, right after I got off the line with Carmen Best, they did cut her salary in the budget meeting at the Seattle Council. So that's breaking news. They cut her salary to $275,000 a year, which is a 40% cut. But here's the problem with that. What Lisa Herbold was pushing for, what all these people were pushing for in Carmen Best's salary cut, so they would to punish her because she dared criticize them. She was going to then be the second lowest paid department head in Seattle, even though she runs the largest department in the city of Seattle. So they're cutting the salary of a black woman to that of her, less than that of her white predecessor. But I want to focus on Lisa Herbold, Andrew Lewis, and Dan Strauss for a minute here. Because what all three are exhibiting is 10 months ago, so they could get elected, they said what they knew the people of this region want and need. And we saw that again with this tremendous turnout for supporting the cops yesterday. Oh, and I want to clarify what they cut her salary to. I'm getting more details on this. They were threatening to cut it to $175,000 or $170,000, and they cut it to... they did not do that 40% cut. They cut it a little bit to $270,000. So it's a little salary cut for Carmen Best. So that's the clarification as we're just getting this breaking news in right now. But let's get back to Herbold, Andrew Lewis, Dan Strauss. So they knew that the city needed more cops and that we needed to invest more in the police. But when you have no intellectual compass, and more importantly, when you have absolutely zero moral compass, then you are willing to throw the city into the sewer so that you can appease the domestic terrorists. So every one of them, in their own words, know that we need more funding and more cops, but now they're afraid of the domestic terrorists. Maybe they'll come to my house and terrorize my family. And so they've just caved in. But I think it's fair to say, having played the audio that Brandy compiled there, Lisa Herbold, Andrew Lewis, Dan Strauss are three people in politics, three of many, who have absolutely zero moral compass. Their own words prove it. And our Fastest 15 is coming up next.